But we don't want to see, and the president has been very consistent on this, we do want to see a reoccupation of Gaza by Israel. We think that's not good for Israel. It's not good for the people of Gaza. So we do not support that. What we do support is some sort of governance in Gaza long term that includes the voices and the votes and the self-determination of the Palestinian people.
Are you high?
Now, what does that look like? We don't know yet. We're asking ourselves those questions literally every day as well, and we're going to continue to talk to our Israeli counterparts about that. But we've been very clear. Reoccupation of Gaza is not in the best interest of anyone.
What do you mean reoccupation of Gaza? I understand this language here. I'm going to hit this and hammer this for as long as they do it. I'm going to do it. So, well, first off, welcome to the show. It's Monday. Dana Lash here with you today to start your week off. It's officially holiday season. It's Christmas here. I'm going to make it Christmas. So if you see a tree pop up in the background, get over it. It's going to happen. We're going to fight over that later. Good to be with you. Happy Monday. Dana Lash with you. And you can listen to the radio show across the country. You can stream it. YouTube, Facebook, always good discussion at YouTube, by the way. And 347, channel 347, DirecTV, you can find us there too. Okay, so I just got to come back. Forgive me for a moment here. I need to come back to his language, because you guys know how I am. Big language person, okay? The revolution is complete when the language is perfect. It's Orwell. We all know, this is why I hammer this so hard, the language on this. So here's the issue. The way that they're talking about the reoccupation, that phrase, reoccupation, what it's saying is that they believe that they had occupied that land and then they left it, and now they're going to reoccupy it, because they didn't reoccupy it. It was just straight the hell up their land. You know, that's James Brown has a great song. James Brown is one of the most phenomenal artists of our lifetime, and he was. And I will literally have a West Side Story knife fight with somebody over it. He was just a brilliant artist. Love James Brown. Oh my gosh. My stepdad grew up listening to Motown, listening to funk and all that. Pay the Cost to Be the Boss is one of my favorite songs. In fact, it should be my ringtone. I get very dudeish about it. They paid the cost, long story short, to bring the tugboat to shore. They paid the cost to be the boss in that area. That's their land. They unilaterally left it. 2005, picked up and left. 2 weeks ago, I went over in detail exactly everything that they left behind. Greenhouses, irrigation. They just imagine you moving your home, you moving to a new home, and you don't even sell your house. You just leave everything there. You leave your furniture. You leave your kids' stuff. You leave your car. Hell, you leave your place of employment. Just leave your job open. Just leave. And you just unilaterally leave. Don't take anything with you. And you leave it all there for the people who are moving in. Now, I would say that that was a peaceful surrender, as far as I'm concerned. That's what I think that was. It was a peaceful surrender. And that the occupation actually is the fictional government that Gaza pretends to be, the fictional country. So that's kind of how I look at it. There's no such thing as reoccupation. And the reason why it angers me so much that a member of our government is saying it is because he can try to walk a fine line as much as he wants to. But when you use that phrase, you are echoing Hamas. That argument, you can disagree with me on this. That's a Hamas argument. To call things occupation, or to say that they don't want Israel reoccupying, you're talking from the perspective of Hamas, because Hamas's position is that, well, hell, if they bitch and whine enough, they should be able to get it. That's theirs. If they want your car, that's your car. That's their car now. How dare you occupy their car that you bought with your own money? Cain, it's like the house that you pay for, your home, where you post pictures of you grilling outside of your home. Imagine you have to leave your grill and your home. You're occupying their house. How dare you? Get out of it. That's their grill. You're occupying their grill. You see what I mean? Like me having to leave I'd be occupying their, because they want it. That's not how this works. Can you, by the way, that's just like the most, that's a conquering phrase. That's a phrase of, that's colonization. To just say that, it's our land. It's not though. Never has been in history. And I don't like John Kirby using that language, because that's Hamas language. It is, you can, again, you can you're free to disagree. I can't agree with you because I just don't like being wrong. So why they keep saying this? We don't want to. There's a different way they could phrase this. They could say, well, we don't think that they should move back to the area. I mean, that would be you could, you know, for the sake of right now. If I'm just talking about their perspective, they could do that just for the sake of right now. But they're not. They're not doing that. They're using the phrase reoccupy. So that's kind of the problem I have. So don't think that I'm being picky on language, because every now and then I have somebody who's like, Dana, you sound like you're being really. But there's a reason why. It's the war of words. Again, Orwell, the revolution is complete when the language is perfect. And it's really weird to me to hear John Kirby say that, because that is a Hamas point. They believe that that is a Hamas point. And so I've got still a million observations about that. But we're going to get into some of the other stuff. London has fallen. Have you guys seen? Did you see they had their Remembrance Day? Did you guys see some of the photos and some of the video? My gosh, did you see some of the video? There were how many people? I mean, thousands, tens of thousands of pro-Hamas supporters that descended on the streets, and they were waving. In fact, there was like a professor that got caught waving a Hamas flag, and yeah, it's not just the United States; it's everywhere. They said that it was their, it was just wild. I saw there was a couple, anybody that was like out and about in the streets, if they had their head covering on, if they were identified as Jewish, they were targeted and immediately swarmed. What gets me is I also saw a video of an older couple that was out. They were in the tube. And I guess they had come out for some of the Remembrance Day demonstrations, and they had Israel pins on, and they were targeted by pro-Hamas protesters. I mean, just it was just wild to see some of the messaging on this, and from these people. I mean, they filled up. I mean, they're filling the streets. And some of them were carrying swastikas. I mean, these are signs. These are just random videos. There was we have this one audio cut. I think I do believe we have this. So they had this one guy who was out. And I wish that I could say that this was like one of the audio. I really wish that I could say that this was kind of the exception and not the rule. But it definitely wasn't, because they had, like I said, I mean, there were people who were out in the street with like actual swastikas, which just, again, it's 2023, out there with an actual swastika. But they had one guy who was out there who was saying that Hitler knew how to take care of these people. He actually said this like in a microphone on camera. It was just the wildest thing I've ever seen. He actually said that on camera. And all these people on the street, I mean, that's no. I didn't see any of the British police go and aggravate those people. But the elderly couple that I mentioned that was getting harassed in the tube for wearing an Israeli pin, they got harassed by the British police, who treated them as the aggressor because they were shouting, "Leave me alone." And the pro-Hamas protesters would not stop. And it was the police that ended up aggravating the older couple. The older woman, I mean, she was, I would say, I mean, what, they looked like they were in their late 60s. She was in tears. She was in absolute tears. I mean, they had people calling, quote, "death to all Jews." That's a ton of that on camera. I mean, these are all just like different video clips that are all online. Remember that they had the cop. Apparently, there's a photo of the cop. Do you remember the cop that visited the autistic teenager in the UK because she said that she looked like a lesbian? Because apparently her grandmother was a lesbian and that lady looked like her grandmother or something to that effect. And they actually were going to try to charge this autistic teenager who is a minor for hate speech, quote unquote hate speech, because it hurt the lesbian cop's feels. I mean, these people who are screaming death to Jews and all that stuff, not a damn thing done. None of these people in Britain. Now, I'm not advocating for laws that, you know, arresting people for speech. What I'm advocating for is consistency. There's zero consistency in Britain. It is a joke. I would be afraid to say anything over there, honestly. I mean, it is wild what people get hit for over there. They have no free speech. Absolutely zero free speech. I mean, there was a guy, tons of people who were arrested for calling pro-Hamas protesters, literally what I just said, pro-Hamas. They got arrested for that. Or they would call somebody a terrorist on camera, and they were arrested for saying that someone was a terrorist. Oh, goodness, I guess they mistook the people waving the pro-Hamas signs and the swastikas and calling for death to all Jews. Oh, I guess it was their bad that they mistook them as being terrorists. I mean, heaven forbid. I mean, some police officers were telling the press, oh, well, you're getting arrested for breaching the peace. When they had the pro-Hamas people out there, apparently they were, it was like 2-1, if not more, than the anti-Hamas demonstrators or the pro-Israel demonstrators. I mean, they stormed stores in London. People were threatening customers to leave. It was crazy. Cafes, they were storming different cafes there. That's the colonization that's happening, by the way. When you immigrate, like people who are immigrating to London, and there are parts of London where they want Sharia to be the system of law, Islamic jurisprudence to be the system of law. Women have no representation in courts, et cetera, et cetera. That's colonization. That is what colonization is. The colonization is happening in places like London, where Jewish people have to be careful even having their kids walk to school. The colonization is happening on college campuses. The colonization is happening everywhere where you see the values of free, or at least somewhat in Britain, but free speech and freedom to assemble and basic freedom to be able to worship unassaulted. Those values are under attack. That is the colonization that is taking place. And everyone around the world is trying to brainwash everyone into thinking that the aggressor is the victim. We have a lot more because apparently Naomi Biden, that's Joe Biden's granddaughter, her Secret Service agents opened fire in Georgetown because someone was breaking into a car that was outside of her, I guess, her vehicle. This is just wild. So we're going to get into all of that. We also have some 2024 for you. Tim Scott has a very just like anticlimactic way of dropping out of the race. That was interesting. Hillsdale has a short video up over at Dana4FORHillsdale.com. And they show you how all the work they do is super effective in defending American liberty, not just on its Michigan and Washington, D.C. campuses, but across the country. Now, Hillsdale is a small Christian classical liberal arts college in southern Michigan, and they were founded in 1844, and they protect robust debate of ideas, openly, honestly, honest debate, and they were founded to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberties, and they hold true to that mission today. To learn more about Hillsdale's mission and the mission of Hillsdale College overall, visit Dana4FORHillsdale.com. Watch that video that explains everything that they do. That's Dana4HillsdaleHillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, improving hearts.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Okay, so first up, the FBI has seized New York City Mayor Eric Adams's cell phone in a campaign probe, according to the Washington Times from Kerry Pickett. The FBI seized these phones used by Adams. They're saying that this story is like getting some, the legs are getting longer. They said it's a federal corruption probe into his campaign. The seizure relates to an investigation into whether or not his campaign accepted illicit donations from the Turkish government. Things I did not have on my bingo card for this week, guys. The agency executed the search warrant on November 2nd at the home of his 25-year-old intern and one of his big fundraisers for his 21 mayoral campaign. So they got records, documents, electronic communications, all kinds of stuff. So the investigation is ongoing. And he was saying, very interesting, his statement said, I want to be clear, I have no knowledge, direct or otherwise, of any improper fundraising activity, certainly not any foreign money. We'll, of course, work with officials. That means, yeah, it's happened. But he's like trying to sidestep it, right? He's trying to dodge the relation. Moody's has dropped U.S.'s credit rating to a negative status. Yay! Moody's, and I know, right? Oh, heavens. Moody's Investors Service, this was just very late Friday, cut its outlook on the U.S. sovereign credit rating to negative from stable, citing higher interest rates and doubts about our government's ability to implement effective fiscal policies. Now, the negative outlook means that a rating may be cut in the future. Doesn't mean that it will be. They continue to rate U.S. sovereign debt AAA, one of the only three major credit rating companies to maintain that in the world's largest economy. So it's only going to get worse, I would imagine, after 24. The QAnon shaman, Jacob Chansley, isn't he the guy? I mean, he didn't damage anything. You trespass or whatever. He didn't break anything from what I saw. He just wore a buffalo head, and I don't know how he didn't freeze to death. He's the guy. He's filing paperwork for a 2024 congressional bid. SAG-AFTRA, the board approved a strike-ending contract on an 86% vote. Fran Drescher, who's actually the head of SAG, she told everyone that they did approve ending the strike, 86% vote. So that means your stuff's coming back. It means, you know, we'll get more what? Yellowstone, more other stuff. Stick with us, a lot more in store. Our friends over at Wise Foods. You know, if that were true, then, you know, if it was true that that was the party's platform and they just wanted to bomb everything, then we really need some Wise food storage. We would. That's a segue. I made that happen. You're welcome. Are you prepared for whatever life throws your way? No, you're not. Don't lie. When emergencies strike, the last thing that you want to worry about is where your next meal is going to come from. You don't want your kids looking at you going, why didn't you get Wise food storage when Dana was talking about it? And you could save $50 on your 4-week survival food kit, mom and dad. So you could do that right now. Get free shipping at preparewithdana.com. Get a 2-bucket 4-week survival food kit. 2,200 calories, 64 grams of protein per day, 28-day supply. Everything is made with high-quality U.S. ingredients. Freeze-dried, dehydrated, easy to prepare. Just add water. 25-year shelf life as well. They have a ton of different dishes. I mean, I could spend the rest of the day telling you everything that they have, or you could go to preparewithdana.com and read the list for yourself. Order yours today at preparewithdana.com and save $50 on your 4-week survival food kit, plus you get free shipping. So visit preparewithdana.com. That's preparewithdana.com.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is Israel operating according to the rules of war?
Well, Dana, I'm not going to sit here and play judge or jury on that question. What I'm going to do is state the principle of the United States on this issue.
I think you can say,
which is straightforward. Israel has a right, indeed a responsibility.
They haven't given him authority to say it, apparently, but you should be able to say it. That was, what's his face? Jake Sullivan, NSA, who was asked by Dana Bash, what about the rules of war? And he was saying, well, I'm not going to sit here and play judge or jury on whether they're operating according to the rules of war. By the way, welcome back, Dana Lash here. Here's the rules of war. Are you a bad guy? Okay, you're going to get killed. And there you have it. Thanks, guys. We're here all day. That's it. That's the rules of war. Dems de rules. Are you a bad guy? Yes? Okay, get killed. Are you a terrorist? Yep. Terrorists get murked. That's the way it is. It's true. That's all you need. Just have a big, giant board and put it up on the whiteboard. Put it up there. Are you a terrorist? Because if you're a terrorist, you get murked. Are you the baddie? Baddies get murked. Those are the rules of war, Dana Bash. Those are the rules of war. Those seem pretty simple, right? Baddies get murked. Yeah. War is hell. So when you see, this is the thing that I would strive for as a leader. Right. And we're going to talk about my leadership capabilities here momentarily in the context of how I operated my Minecraft world, which I thought was brilliant and highly productive. But aside from that, you know, were I a leader, you know, I would want all the other leaders of the world to be terrified to think that, oh, my gosh, if the United States were to ever dispatch its warfighters in the interest of United States security and its interest. That is the most terrifying thing ever. Let's everyone live in peace. I would want them to choose peace, even if it was out of fear. I would want them to choose peace. Fearfully choose peace. That's my motto. It'd be one of my mottos. See, I told you I'd fit in the Warhammer universe. What? See, why nobody believes me? Like, it would be perfect. Fearfully choose peace. That sounds like one of the things that pops up on the loading screen when you're getting ready to go back to the Morningstar. Come on.
Sounds peace through strength, though. Sounds.
Yeah, peace through strength sounds like
similar.
That. Similar, but fearfully choose peace is like, or you're going to get your ass kicked. That part's not said because it's too long of a right. slogan, right?
I'm seeing a lot of similarities.
I'm just saying. So, you know, my thought is that I would want all the other countries to be so terrified of having to deal with our war fighters. Because, see, the rules of war in Danaverse is baddies get murked. Then, if you provoke us to the point where we have to send out our military, well, then that's a bummer for you. Because that's my only rule of war. We live in a realistic universe. Yes, I know. That totally rustles the jimmies of all the people who are like, we live in a world of kittens and sunshine. And when it snows, it's glitter. And the snowmen never melt. And they all talk like Olaf from Frozen. I mean, I realize that there are people that want to live in that world. They have snow globe thinking. We don't live in a snow globe. Okay. We don't have that reality. We have a reality where we got some baddies that would love to just murk you right TF up. And you got to deal with them. And sometimes brutality only knows brutality. And that's why people say war is hell. I would want the consequence of provoking the United States to be an inescapable hellscape that cycles to the point where future generations 5 and 6 deep fear such a response again. And so they fearfully choose peace. That's my thought. Got to tell you, that's my thought. I have more meat and potatoes to get into, but this kind of gets into my whole way of operating my Minecraft world. So I'm going to let you guys in on something. I'm going to get back to the other stuff because I know you guys are so excited to talk about all the 2024 news. Ooh, even though the votes for Iowa are still, you know, a couple months off. Woo! But anyway, so you may not know this. I've always played a video game of some sort. Now, we're not talking about video games. This is about societal construct. So hold on. I'm going to bring the tugboat in. So I've always played stuff, right? I've always played games. Like, I taught my kids how to play video games. And as you would want to see as a parent, they've bested you. That's the whole goal of parenthood, right? You raise up the next generation and hope that they're greater than you. In that regard, they are. Not with cooking, though, unfortunately. But with games, yes, they definitely are. I remember when they used to have to bring me their Nintendos, their little, what is it, I can't remember what they're called anymore. What were those called? Yeah, thank you, the Game Boy. Mom, can you get me past this level? Or I'd have to go when they had their first Xbox. Mom, can you get me past this level? Now, it's not like that at all. So anyway, when they were a little younger and we homeschooled, one of the greatest ways, by the way, it's a homeschool tool, was Minecraft, right? There was no wokery in it. You could make it private. You could join, like, we had a code. We could do all kinds of stuff. You could, like, literally learn stuff from it. I learned a lot about geology. And I also spent 10 years building probably the largest hand-built world in the entire game in the world, I would imagine. Like, I haven't touched it in, like, a year and a half, but you recreate Monticello, read all this other stuff. And then I used to do that in crochet. That really, it really went crazy during lockdown. And then I don't know if it's my oldest son or my youngest son that noticed how my societies functioned. See, because I have a rule in the Minecraft Danaverse. You've got to contribute. And now let's just put this out there. Every one of these NPCs, so you have Minecraft and then they populate NPCs, you know, non-playable character, they're what, automated. They just walk around, they have sounds that they make, they all go, and that's it. They're programmed to do certain things. You can throw down different boxes and assign them tasks or like their jobs. So if you build a beehive out of some of these stupid blocks, you can have a beekeeper. If you put a bucket by some water, you got a fisherman. And they're genderless. They're all ugly. And the Minecraft doesn't care about that because it's all about the zombies and all that. Anyway, yeah, that's in there. So you can see what I'm saying. Like, you can have people literally be like a Fletcher, like the guy who makes the arrows, right? What do they call him? Fletcher? Guy who makes the arrows? Somebody will tell me, and I don't care. And you've got what is it? Like a potions master, essentially. The guy with the beakers. You can put that block. I mean, you can do all kinds of stuff. Iron workers, everything. Anyway, farmers. I would get real aggravated when I would put down and I would create, you know, a village as like a buffer, you know, for my village against the zombies. And, you know, I'm putting these blocks out and I'm like creating these characters, you know. And there are some of them that actively chose to be pieces of crap. Like they literally would not. Every one of them had a box, like a task box. And some of them literally chose to not work. They chose to be communists. They chose to leech off of a very productive society. And that was problematic for me, right? Because those were the ones at night, when night came, that's when all the monsters come out. Those are the ones that get infected, right? Those are the ones that get murked or get turned or something like that. So I'm like, well, you know, for the safety of the, you know, this is not the United States. We don't have, you know, a Magna Carta inspired constitution. So we're going to do the Danaverse. You got to go, dude, Merc. And so that, you know, this society could function. My kids think that that's horrible. Well, if they're not contributing anything, they're not doing the bee stuff. They're not, you know, farming. They're not out there fishing cane. They're not out there hammering whatever it is they hammer on their little iron blocks. Then, you know, like, what's the point? Why? What's the point? Now, I realize that that's, you know, it's a world where I basically am the master. This is terrifying. This is why people better thank the stars that there's a God, because can you imagine? That would be my world. That's your world without the Lord. So we have a lot of NPCs in this world. Actually, you know what, Kane? Minecraft is a great argument against atheism. This is what you have. It's kind of Pascal's wager, sort of, which is still kind of logically flawed, but yet it motivates and it works. It's a bit like a modern day Pascal's wager. So this, I just think, as Kane noted, we got a lot of NPCs in this world. I don't think that that's a cruel way to operate in that reality, Kane. Yeah. I don't think so. Sure. I don't think it's a, see, you agree with me. Yeah. My kids thought I was horrible. I'm like, they're digital NPCs. They don't matter. Okay. Right? This isn't like the United States where we're like, oh, we're going to pat you on the head. And again, there's nothing wrong with it. There's no issue that the NPCs have to get over or overcome. They are not disadvantaged in any way. They just don't want to work. They're like the modern college kid protesting for Hamas on college campuses. They just don't want to. They don't want to do it. They don't want to take the time to read anything. They don't want to work. They don't want to. That's the Minecraft NPC. So that's why In that reality, it's not cruel at all. Kane, I think it's actually nice. It's nice to the other villagers, right?
I think so.
The ones that are productive.
I think so.
I'm going to cut this and I'm going to send it to my kids.
Makes their productivity valuable. Therefore,
exactly.
That spreads as opposed to the opposite message.
Yeah, exactly. So see, this is how. So it's just, you know, I feel a lot. Now that we've had this conversation, I feel a lot more justified when they try to give me nonsense for it. So I'm just saying that's just now I want to get into a couple because we got the 2024 stuff. Speaking of NPCs, I slightly joke.
Not really.
Tim Scott is out. He had a very anticlimactic. Well, audio sound by 13. You tell me what you think. This was just like a wah, wah. Listen.
I love America more today than I did on May 22nd. But when I go back to Iowa, it will not be as a presidential candidate. I am suspending my campaign. I think the voters who are the most remarkable people on the planet have been really clear that they're telling me not now.
I got to tell you, I've never disliked Tim Scott. I disagree with him on foreign policy. I mean, he's like a little Lindsey Graham. But he's always been super classy, and I think he gets it because you got to winnow the field, man. You got to have Vivek, Tim Scott, and Chris Christie. They got to go. And Tim Scott's like, you know what? I'm not. I think he actually did run earnestly. I think that he genuinely, I think, really thought that, you know, maybe I got a shot at this. I don't think it was a campaign audition or anything of that, you know, nature. I think it was, you know, in that regard. But with Vivek Ramaswamy, I definitely think it's a stalking horse kind of thing. And I think he needs to go. Chris Christie is just vengeance. He's pure vengeance. His whole campaign is, I bet, I've never gone to his campaign website, but I wouldn't be surprised if you went there. And it was just like a GeoCities website where it had a banner of I hate Trump that just went back and forth across the whole page. And every policy was hate Trump. Like, what does he think about, you know, fiscal policy? And it was just, it would just be that. Or foreign policy, anything else. That's kind of, you know, he needs to go. He needs to go. And I think that DeSantis and Haley, I think Haley's going to have more of a struggle. I will say she's done a very good job at keeping her name in the press and trying to be and remaining politically relevant after her time as governor. I still disagree with her on foreign policy, and I get very, very nervous about that. But the it needs to, and they got to, and they need to finish this up. They need to finish this up. It's got to be, but I think it, you're not going to see that until after Iowa, maybe. Vivek Ramaswamy, though, I think he's burning more bridges than he has bridges. I think he's now burning other people's bridges, because I'm seeing people who were interested in him just now like, not anymore. We got to, we'll talk more about this, because we also have some of the latest foreign policy. Joe Biden this week is going to be meeting with Xi Jinping. I anticipate nothing coming of that, because it's just, it's a point. I don't know why they're doing this. I have no clue why. And also, do you think he can actually handle it? Also, Democrats need to come to terms with, do you think Biden's going to get better with age? Seriously, another four, just imagine another 4 years of that guy. Well, yeah, we have more to come. Our partners who help bring you free radio, it's our friends over at Caltech, the R50, great Florida company. And they make a lot of awesome food. And the Caltech R50 is no exception. Now, you're familiar with the P50. It stands for 50 pews. I mean, it's just, you know, it's super awesome. It stands for 50 pews. But the Caltech R50 with this, this is their carbine. And the cool thing about this is that it's incredibly versatile. That's one of the things that's that you should know about this. It's incredibly versatile, and you're going to be able to trust that it's made from a great company. The R50, it offers, like the P50, over 7 inches of rail space up top. So you get a lot of options for optics. You got additional rail space on the bottom for accessories as well. The R50, it looks like a SpaceX. It looks like that Marvin the Martian blaster. It does. Marvin the Martian looks like his blaster from Warner Brothers. But it takes the same mags as the P50, but you got all the benefits of a carbine. You got the ambicide folding stocks, a 16-inch threaded barrel, really awesome ballistics, super light, well-balanced, very easy to manipulate and accurate. Now, as the P50 stands for 50 pews, the R50 stands for, well, also 50 pews. Standard capacity, right? Standard capacity. That's all you need to know. The R50 series, it's the 5.7. The P50 started all the R50s, it's like the brother of it. And again, you still have that same capacity, the same lightweight, same innovation. It's a great 5.7. You got to check it out. It's the R50 rifle from KeltechWeapons.com. Learn everything you need to know about the R50 carbine, KeltechWeapons.com. That's KeltechWeapons.com. Tell them that Dana sent you.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
We want to create an entertainment complex for film, for music, for theater, for the performing and visual arts. And when I say that in front of our Gen Z and millennials, they're ready to stay, and they're ready to help me build this city.
Where are my millennials at? Where is our, is it like millennials? Where's what is a are you a millennium, Kane?
No, not a manilium.
Manilium.
That was the only choice of folder color that I had growing up. Manila.
Yeah. I mean, Gen Z, Gen Z makes sense. You know, where's my Gen Z? I can see. I get that. Millennials. Where are my millennials? Manilium?
Need to stay, and they're ready to help me build this city.
Manilliums. I can't. I had, you know how hard we had to practice to say that word? Because it's
when I say that in front of our Gen Z and millennials.
Millennials. What is that? Or how did Jill Biden? I can't even say it wrong. But how did Bogota? Bogota.
Bogota. Yeah.
Bogota. Si se puede. Still the best. She may have just like conjured up a demon by that, like by saying it wrong. Who knows? Like when you butcher language, man, you go into weird areas. All right. That was Sheila Jackson Lee, by the way, known for being just a very intelligent wordsmith, that one. All right, so coming up, 2024, the latest with the Bidens, because apparently Joe Biden's granddaughter's Secret Service detail had to open up fire. People were trying to break in a car outside her house. We'll talk about that. Biden's meeting Xi Jinping. So much on the way. Stick with us. If you want strong coffee that wakes you up in the morning, you need Black Rifle Coffee. If you want some strong coffee, it's going to put some hair on your chest, even if you're a woman, maybe not. Then you're going to want some Black Rifle Coffee. Everything else just tastes like sadness. It tastes like sadness and defeat. So you want a winning coffee. That's Black Rifle Coffee. Unlike the other people out there, they actually roast their own beans. They don't have they don't import the roasted beans and then white label it and pretend they do it themselves. They actually do it themselves. And they've been also raising a lot of money to benefit vets through the Boot campaign, $1 million to be precise. Through the ready-to-drink coffee. So they have the ready-to-drink coffee cans. You can get them as 12-packs as part of the coffee club. Coffee club, by the way, is the best way to drink coffee. If you love coffee, you're going to want to be part of the coffee club because you get your selected roast or roasts, if you like, you know, more than one. You can choose how often you want it delivered, and then you get free shipping. I mean, you can't go wrong at all with the coffee club. It's awesome. And every can of that ready-to-drink coffee contributes to making goes all to that $1 million donation to veterans through the Boot campaign. The Boot campaign focuses on really customized care to our vets who are coming back from combat, and they treat the invisible wounds of war, post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, chronic pain, all of it. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community. With your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
The president said nobody should have to work two jobs to stay out of poverty. This woman has three. Yes, 14 million jobs. But how many people have to work two of them to stay afloat? Labor Department numbers came out for the third quarter. Nearly 8.4 million people in this country are working at least two jobs. That's the highest number since 2019. So when people are looking for that economic shift, they don't feel it. To that woman, you say what?
Yeah, I'd say that that's precisely why we need another 4 years to continue to finish the job, right? I think it's important, too, that the president, of course, wants to get all of this done, but we have to be honest about the brick wall of MAGA extremism that we continue to run into when we're trying to get things done for the American people.
That's what it is. That's why everybody's broke, didn't you know? It's MAGA extremism. MAGA extremism. I don't know if you guys know this, but the MAGA extremism becomes all of the molecules in the air actually solidify. Yeah, that's right. They turn into somewhat malleable solid, Kane. It's the science. And they prevent money going into people's checking accounts.
Wow.
Nobody knows that. It's a phenomenon that they're still studying, you know. I mean,
skeptical.
Crazy. Okay. That's the MAGA extremism, you know. Welcome back to the show, Dana Lasher. Dana Lasher with you. Top of the second hour, ladies and gentlemen. That was Checks Notes. Michael Tyler, who is the, that is his comms director, Biden's comms director. That's not just like a lower level stooge. Oh, dude, you went to school for this. You probably paid six figures to get the degree that enabled you to just, you know, poo the bed, so to speak, on national television. Wow. I mean, you know, it's they're worse off economically under Biden. That's why we need another 4 years to finish him off. I mean, so I finished the job. That's what he meant. That's what I heard. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
They're going to finish you off. That's what I heard. I'm just, you know, say otherwise, but, you know, it's what I heard from that. I'm just saying. That's what I heard. Yeah, that is his comms guy. Whoo, boy. Whoo, whoo. So the Bidenomics, speaking of which, I got a couple things here. I've got nobody's happy at all. 14% of Americans think Biden's made them better off as a president. 70% think that Bidenomics has hurt them. Guys, you didn't see him travel to like a couple places over the past 3 years telling everyone that Bidenomics is great and that it's you're making money. Just believe him. Don't believe your bank account. Believe him. You only have a couple bucks in there. That's a lie. I mean, he acts like he's Obi-Wan. and they're getting ready to, you know, they're on Tatooine. There's no one here. We can go on now. That's not how it works. It's not how it works at all. I keep seeing all of these economic flags. I mean, we talked a little bit about the housing market last week. I would expect, particularly as the temps drop, because remember, the Saudis have decreased the amount of crude they're putting out there after Biden went hat in hand. It's going to get more expensive. I'm just telling you. Speaking of oil and that little Greta chick. Oh, yeah. Well, she's not little. She's a grown-ass female adult. Why do people act like she's still 10? She was, where was this at? She was in the Netherlands, or where was she? Where was this at? All I know is that she was at some rally. I guess it was the Netherlands. She was at some rally. It was supposed to be a climate rally, a rally about the weather. And then she started rallying for Hamas. Of course she did. That makes all the sense in the world. And a dude jumps up on stage, and it was like one of the most polite interruptions. I'm here for a climate protest, not a political opinion. Listen to this. This is fascinating.
We have not been listening. The people in power have not been listening.
I have come here for a climate demonstration, not a political view.
She was not going to give that mic up. She chases him yelling, shut up. Gosh, she is so annoying. Gaza's elected government. And the guy gets up there and he was like, I was here for a climate protest, not a political view. I mean, some would say that was a political view that you came out for. However, he was not going to hear the rallying for terrorists. He was not going to do it. Not that kind of terrorism anyway. The climate terrorism is totally different, right? It's virtuous. How dare thou? It's virtuous to riot for the weather. I'm going to block the road because I'm mad about the weather. So those sides, who wins? It's like a cage match of stupidity. Put them in an octagon. Who wins? Climate terrorists versus the Hamas terrorists. One of them have a long time doing terrorist stuff, right? I mean, the other people, they what do? The climate people, they spray paint works of art and they lay down in the roadways. They lay down in the roadways. That's just giving up. Is that terrorism? It's just giving up. I would like to save the taxpayers money. I'm going to put a speed bump here. I saw you need one. I will volunteer for myself. Just the same. So the she was turning it into a political rally and they weren't having it. So at least there's some lines. They have some lines that they will not cross, the climate people. I talk about them like they're the letter people. It was a great show. It was a great show back in the day. All right, so a few things. I'm sure that you saw, let me pull this up. Oh my gosh, over at NBC. They were saying there are babies dying in the Al-Shifa hospital in Gaza. The Al-Shifa hospital has stopped functioning and they have all these babies there and they don't have any more electricity. And it's so ignorant what Israel is doing to the Al-Shifa hospital. Can you tell me where Hamas's headquarters are in Gaza? The Al-Shifa hospital. Yes, that's right. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of important to know. They've made themselves a headquarters out of babies and hospital patients. And then how dare you try to strike off facility Israel? It's very important to know, by the way. Very important to know. They haven't had power for 3 days, WHO. And they said that, oh my gosh, there's this, so much is happening. And I'm with you. I'm going to need to see some pictures of them dead babies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the standard.
That is the standard. I mean, you had entire groups of people just a few weeks ago who were saying, show some baby heads. Okay, I'm going to need to see the dead baby pictures from the Al-Shifa hospital. Yep. I'm going to need to see them.
I haven't seen them.
Yeah, have you seen them? I haven't seen them. Mm-mm. I mean, you know, the hospital that Hamas literally uses as its headquarters, the hospital that everybody knows that Hamas uses as its headquarters. Like, everybody in the world knows that Hamas uses the Al-Shifa hospital as its headquarters. And not because you have to be an expert on political affairs in that region, not because you need to be a terror expert, just because it is mind-bogglingly insane to use a hospital as your terror headquarters. That's why. That's why. That's why everybody knows this. Not because they're terror experts, because that's how craven and depraved it is. Yeah, oh yeah, they did. The IDF was letting everybody know you need to leave. You need to leave. We'll even help you get people out. You need to leave. You need to leave. You need to leave for like 3 days. And a lot of, so Hamas probably wanted to keep those babies there. I mean, it's not beyond the, in fact, I would bet on it, because they were not allowing a lot of people to even leave the strip. They weren't even allowing people to leave the strip. Yes, they said people, oh, there's so much at risk. Yes, the hospital that Hamas, again, worst kept secret, not even a secret, they advertise it. That's their headquarters. They literally use that. Just curious. So I just, they found weapons. There was a weapons cache that they found in a children's school. Another one. We, again, this is something else that we know. Video footage. It was a Gazan kindergarten stuffed to the brim with weapons and IEDs and all kinds of stuff. It was a colorful classroom. They found charge blocks, ammunition, all kinds of stuff in a kindergarten. Again, not the first time this has happened that they found this. Not the first time that this has ever been reported either. This is something else that is common knowledge. They do this so that they can claim war crimes and atrocities. Unbelievable. Yeah, they found this. They were using a school. There was another. This is secondary from this. There was one classroom where they found all these munitions. Then there was the school that apparently was being a military base for Hamas. And they found plans. They found documents. They found blueprint. What they found in this place, too, was the full extent of what they were trying to do on October 7th. So they were trying to take it. They wanted to go all the way through Israel and then unite with some terror groups in West Bank and go from there. Yeah, that's all absolutely true. So just, I will say that there have been some people pushing back on some of this. My friend Caleb Howe over at Mediaite reported how there was one congressman who was on, I think this was ABC, it was Jared Moskowitz, who is a Florida Democrat representative. And he was on with Republican Mike Lawler, and they were talking with John Carl. And they're currently in Tel Aviv, and they're a part of this bipartisan delegation. They appeared on this week on ABC. They met with Netanyahu. And one of the things that Lawler noted immediately, he was like, the death toll that you keep showing on your screen, he said, that's not even accurate. He said, you're quoting Hamas. When it's the quote unquote Palestinian, it's technically Gazan, because Palestine's not a real country or a real people. But they said that's that government entity that's giving you that number. That government entity is literally the elected Hamas that's giving you. You're taking that from the people who are waging these attacks. That's insane. And so I'm glad that he and Moskowitz agreed. I'm glad that they're calling that out. They need to. Couple of other things with this. We were talking about the insanity in London. They had a soccer club secretary, a football club secretary, 61. He's amateur. And he's in Surrey. He's wanted by the police because he called pro-Hamas protesters terrorists. Yeah, 61-year-old Kevin Sweeney. That was at that Waterloo station. They put his photograph out like on a wanted poster. He said, yeah, you terrorist, on video, and that's literally it. And they're like, oh, we're going to get you for hate speech. So you can't even, but that's accurate. How is that hate speech when it's true? We have more on the way. Some of the other stuff we're going to get into. The Naomi Biden Secret Service thing, they opened up fire. Chicago, apparently illegal immigrants are saying that Chicago's so bad they want to go back to Venezuela. That's a real headline. We're going to... He can't make it up even if he tried. We're going to get into that. Also, the got a bunch of other stuff. A bunch of other stuff to hit some culture. Joe Biden's going to be meeting with Xi Jinping. That's something we're going to be breaking down with our friend Steve Yates coming up in our third hour as well. So you don't want to miss a single bit. A lot to get into. Our partners, very good friends of mine over at Patriot Mobile. It's who I use for my cell phone service. They've been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider for the past 10 years. They make it easy to switch. I don't know why you would stay with whomever you're using now. Because I guarantee you they're spending a lot of your money against everything that you vote to protect every time you're at the ballot box. So Glenn and the team over at Patriot Mobile have been great supporters of this show. Love working with them. They offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. You're getting the best service in your area. But here's the thing. Your money's not going towards funding the left. You get free activation using code Dana. And they have a 100% U.S.-based customer service team. So you're helping to create and maintain U.S.-based jobs who are going to make it easy for you to switch. You can keep your phone. You can keep your number. You can upgrade. I mean, the choice is entirely yours. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and be sure to mention offer code Dana and get that free activation. That's PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT. Make the switch today.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right. So first up, 3/4 of Americans report leaving gratuity, which is at least 10% higher when presented with hated checkout screens. Look, if I've gone into a florist before and picked up flowers and then it's like, here, what's the tip? And I'm like, no tip. I'm not. I ordered this. It was delivered here. You didn't even do nothing. I'm just picking it up. Like the stuff where you have to serve yourself. I'm not doing a tip. I worked in the service industry. I know this. I would not have done this myself. So, yeah, those hated screens. People really hate that. That's a big thing. That's a big issue. A 2-mile section of LA's I-10, used by 300,000 commuters daily, is closed indefinitely following a massive fire. They're telling people to work from home, carpool, and plan ahead for increased traffic time. Traffic is already horrific there. I can't even imagine how that's going to work. A financial therapist reveals that sadness and anger causes people to splurge on new purchases. It's like some sort of affirmation of the perception of increased valuation for yourself and thinking that something that you acquire is going to help with that. That's interesting. Strawberries apparently help fight dementia. What about daiquiris? Just saying, do daiquiris also? Just asking. University of Cincinnati says that eating strawberries every day could reduce the risk of dementia for certain people of middle age. Their findings were published in the journal Nutrients. 12-week study, 30 overweight patients had complained of mild cognitive impairment. They were asked to abstain from eating berries except for a daily packet of supplement powder mixed with water and consumed with breakfast. Half of them, who were between 50 to 65, received a powder with the equivalent of a cup of whole strawberries, standard serving size. And they tracked their long-term memory, metabolic health, and apparently they noticed improvements with the people who were eating the berries. Interesting. Stick with us. More in store.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Well, I think we need to work for what could be a best-case scenario. I mean, usually politicians transform opportunities into problems. I hope that it will be possible to transform this problem into an opportunity. The best case scenario would be that a reinvigorated Palestinian Authority would be able to assume the leadership also in Gaza, and then that Israel would accept to seriously negotiate a two-state solution.
That's Antonio Guterres with the United Nations. He's the Secretary General, and he's apparently on Hunter Biden's crack. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch here with you. Bottom of this second hour, ladies and gentlemen. He says the best case scenario is for the Palestinian Authority, the least possible, the less possible of the choices that barely have control. Actually, they have control in name only in the West Bank, to assume leadership in Gaza and for and Israel accepts a two-state solution. Israel had accepted a two-state solution. That's expired. That's done now. And Hamas does not want a two-state solution. So guess what? If you try to enforce a solution that Hamas doesn't want, what does that get you, Cain?
More terrorism.
More terrorism. That's right. Because that's why we're in this position in the first place. Because that solution was offered and Israel agreed to it. And Hamas said nosies. And so warsies. That's how that happens. You got to explain it like this for people like Gutierrez, who apparently reads with pictures. That guy. the UN Secretary General. Well, the best case scenario for Hamas to not exist. That's it. That's the tweet. Just that. It's for Hamas to not exist. Yes, for the Palestinian Authority. You mean the entity, the umbrella entity under which Fatah and Hamas apparently are under, that barely, only in name, has control in Gaza, because Hamas, or in West Bank, because Hamas is super popular in West Bank too. More popular than Fatah, and the chair of the PA is also the chair of Fatah, and then Hamas beat Fatah out in elections in Gaza Strip. They're more popular than Fatah in West Bank. So there you go. This doesn't make any sense. Like, has he read up on the current state of affairs, Mr. United Nations Secretary General? Good grief. I love, like, these ridiculous organizations that try to, we need a two-state solution for this fictional country that's never existed in all of antiquity, says almost fictional group that doesn't do anything. Occupies prime real estate in Manhattan. That's all it is. Did you guys hear the story about Naomi Biden's Secret Service detail? They opened up fire on three suspects trying to break into an SUV during her night out in Georgetown. This was midnight on Sunday. And that's Biden's eldest granddaughter. Is she one of the ones who live in the White House or no?
I don't know.
I know she lives in D.C. and she apparently works at a law firm. They've had 750 carjackings this year. So Secret Service agents opened fire after three people tried to break into an unmarked Secret Service vehicle. So it was a Secret Service car. They were assigned to protect Naomi Biden, who's almost, well, she's 30. She's Hunt's daughter. They act like Hunter Biden's a baby. He's got a 30-year-old daughter. Shut up. She was out in the Georgetown neighborhood late Sunday night. Can I ask a question? I realize that mentally I'm like 90. Is it, you're 30 years old and you're out at midnight on a Sunday partying it out? Is that weird?
30?
Yeah.
I don't think it's weird for 30.
Really?
Yeah, I think 30
is acceptable.
Like, I
had two kids by then.
Yeah, I mean, you and me both, but
I had a mortgage, you know, like, what?
We're talking about in today's context, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking 30 is not that crazy.
Wait. Why? That's weird. Isn't it weird?
It's just what I observe. I don't know. Steve's closer to that age.
Okay, Steve, everyone turns to look at Steve. Steve's going to be 29 this week. So Steve's like a year younger than Naomi Biden. Yeah, but like, okay, so you got 1 year left, dude. Then you can't be partying at midnight on a Sunday unless it's like a special festival or something. And, you know, or Christmas or New Year's, you know, like a Super Bowl. Anyway, long story short, is that weird?
I mean,
is it weird, Steve?
Well, I think people nowadays, especially in like Northeast cities, like don't really tend like get engaged quick as people in like rural areas do. Like, there are many people in their 30s that act like they're in their 20s now, especially here. I don't know what that says, but.
So this is basically my 90-year-old mentality coming into effect.
Well, not too much, but I think people just get married later in life, especially in like very liberal cities, and that's the way it is. I don't know what she was doing.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, she was apparently just, it was her night out. That's all they said. She was having a night out, and it was like midnight.
But she got married. She got married last year, though.
She got married last year. What did she do on a night out? Okay. So Dana's 90 years old.
That was that mentally. Wedding. That was that wedding they had at the White House, and everybody flipped out about it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So she, you're married now. You're a married woman. I mean, just saying. This is like the Ozark 90-year-old mentality coming out. I'm like, girl, you're married. You're a 30-year-old married woman. What are you doing out partying at midnight on a Sunday night? See, now that makes it.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes... see, now that... Yeah, now, was he there with her? Maybe they had an event. Okay, well, I'll hear. But apparently, from everything I read, he wasn't there. So, I don't know. So she... I didn't even realize that the grandkids get Secret Service protection. Is that just because they're considered valuable assets to the president and they don't want to have the president of the United States compromised in any way?
That's probably it.
Because that's kind of weird. Like, we're paying for her protection. Can you guys like not be drunks for 5 damn seconds? Can this family like keep their pants on, stay sober for like a second? It would be great. Now, I'm not saying that it's their fault that somebody... Actually, I am. It is your fault. It is your fault. It's your party's fault. It's your ideology's fault. It's the ideology and the party that makes this family, this white trash family, rich in the White House. And so you have 600 and something. I cannot believe that there's that many carjackings in D.C. That's insane to me. That many... I mean, that's like getting up over halfway to 1,000 carjackings. It is that, who's run that town? Who's run DC, Kane?
Democrats.
That's right, Democrats. That's crazy to me. So they said, DC, say this on air. This is funny, or I'm going to steal it from you.
DC's living its Grand Theft Auto dreams.
Grand Theft Auto dreams, GTAD, Grand Theft Auto dreams. There you go. Whew. But they opened fire. They said the investigation's still ongoing. But breaking into a Secret Service vehicle? I would just think, too, because this is D.C. You just got to think that any kind of dark-colored, unmarked car is going to be, no. Right. Don't do it. Right?
Absolutely.
Maybe. I just look out for that kind of stuff. But these people apparently were morons. Because don't they have like a special plate? I think Secret Service has a special plate. Steve goes, not the 15-year-olds with no parents out. That's true. They're dumb. They don't even have anybody to tell them how to carjack like properly, not a government vehicle. I'm not saying like you should, but you know what I mean. Good heavens. The crime is out of control. Out of control. So you have that situation. And then it is so bad in Chicago, apparently, with crime. Here's the headline. Chicago is so unpleasant, illegal immigrants are fleeing back to Venezuela. That is something else. Wow. They're actually leaving to go back to Venezuela. They said they're looking for better paying jobs. The Lone Star State sent, I'm not going to use the phrase migrants, people who crossed illegally. Migrants are immigrants are people who come over and then become citizens and become Americans. People who cross the border illegally and still don't take the effort to continue to, or to make it here where they're here legally. Now you're illegal immigrants. They crossed over. And now they're going to go back because they said it's too dangerous. It's too bad. But it's a sanctuary city offering you sanctuary. That doesn't matter. They said they're done with it. They said it's dangerous. It's bad. The trash, the crime. They said that, in fact, one 39-year-old said, quote, the American dream doesn't exist anymore. There's nothing here for us. Wow. Kind of interesting. Although, you know, come here legally and then try. I mean, the American dream exists. It's just you got to come here legally. You can't say that the American dream doesn't exist just because you're finding it more difficult to do what you want to do because you chose to come here legally. Now, there can be an argument made to maybe perhaps ease some. Now, hear me out, though. To clean up some of the ridiculous bureaucracy that prevents, like, you know, hardworking people, makes them wait for like 10 years to become a citizen. But that doesn't mean I think that immigration should be discriminatory and it should consider heavily whether or not you're a productive member of society. Like, don't be on welfare and come over here to the United States and think you're going to be on welfare here. No. I think we should absolutely discriminate on that. Like, are you going to add to the tax base? Are you going to, you know, are you going to be an asset to the? Okay, then fine, let's do that. You're going to earn money. You're going to work. You're going to, you know, are you going to add to the American dream? Or are you going to grift off it? Are you going to add to the American dream? Or are you going to try to drain it being on welfare? That's the question. So it exists, but you know, you kind of have to come here legally and be able to take advantage of all the opportunities here legally in the United States in order to do that. Good grief. American dream still exists. If you're unhappy, yes, go back to Venezuela. But can you imagine? I mean, they think Venezuela is better than Chicago. They probably aren't wrong.
Wait, the place they ate rats and dogs and
yeah, have you seen
feces
Chicago?
In the street?
I mean, it's pretty much rats and dogs and feces in the streets.
They'd rather go
and
back.
And I say this as a dog lover, Kane. I mean, they'd rather go.
Can you imagine?
Chicago's bad, dude. It's bad. I used to love that city when I was in college. Pfft, not anymore.
But I mean, it's we all know it's bad, but it's so bad that illegal immigrants want to go back
mm-hmm.
to Venezuela?
Yeah.
Good God.
Yeah. It's that bad. It's that bad. You are correct.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions.
It's time for Florida Man.
So I got to tell you about the pig named Pork Chop. A Florida woman was very upset after her severely obese pet pig called Pork Chop was seized by animal control over fears for the 400-pound animal's health. Oh, wow. Pork Chop is so
fat.
It took two officers to carry him out. Can we, oh, please, Juan, can you please zoom in on that on the simulcast? If you're watching the simulcast of the show, that looks like a fake pig. It looks, he's going to show you. It don't even look real. It looks like a balloon with little stubs for legs. The pig had to be carried out of the house by two officers that had to use support straps to support his body and help him walk. Kelly Jacobson, the owner, wept as she told reporters, "I need him," and promised to make him better. Officers said the pig was severely obese, has a skin condition, and needs its tusks and nails groomed. It sounds like, I'm going to be real, it sounds like Kelly Jacobson was not taking care of Pork Chop.
Right.
How do you let Pork Chop get so bad that he's 400 pounds, he can't hardly walk, his health is in danger, his tusks hadn't been trimmed, his nails hadn't been trimmed.
Ain't pigs supposed to be fat, though?
Not 400 pounds. I can't move fat. I mean, oh my gosh. He was carried out by two police officers during the eviction. He was so heavy, 400 pounds. And then Kelly Jacobson was saying, "I need him. I'll do whatever I have to make him better." That's the direct quote. Can I be real, though? It sounds like, you know, you had your chance, girl, and you did not make him better. Like, you let him... It is come. I mean, I feel so bad for it. Did you get the side view of him going into the little? It's from WPTV going into the little. I guess he was. Juan says he looks like a Pokemon. He does. He's so big. Like he was trying to go into the back, and all he's got little stub legs. I don't even know, dude. I've never seen such a fat pig in my life. That is one of the fattest pigs I've ever seen. And so they said Pork Chop is, Jacobson was saying Pork Chop is a service animal. But officers from Palm Beach County Animal Care and Control were like, mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's a service animal. How does it serve you? It can't even move, girl. It can't move. I mean, and she said she tried to put him on a diet and she struggled to find somebody who could groom him. She says, quote, "I have fought a lot of people a long time to keep, and they're taking him away from me." I mean, I get it that you're sad. She also didn't pay rent for 3 months. I get it that you're sad, but like, you know, you got all this money for hand tats, but you don't got no money to get his nails groomed. Girl, what is you doing? Come on. So now they're trying to seek custody of Pork Chop, and then they would like to take him to an animal sanctuary to get him healthy, to lose weight. And it's the Laughing Pig Sanctuary that may take him. He'd have to go on a lean diet of fruits and vegetables. And he can't walk. He didn't really have any activity level to exercise. So they said that one of the ladies said that she was mortified at the way the animal services handled the poor pig. If they don't have the tools to effectively remove him, it's not their fault. But yeah, that's horrific. That is, if you're not taking care of your animals, though, it's not enough just to have them. You have to take care of them. And if you're not taking care of them, that itself is abusive and cruel. So, man, I mean, Pork Chop, girl, you got to let that pig go. I just think that some people need a therapist and not a support animal, okay? I think, you know, that's mean to do that to the animal. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry, actually. Stop it. Stop it. Stop doing it. Cannot believe that's I'm full of jokes. I mean, I love that pig, but oh my gosh, like I just keep thinking no ham and all kinds of stuff. All right. A Florida man was arrested in Chicago with $1.2 million worth of meth.
Oh.
He's in a methy situation. I don't know where that came from. Yeah, he had, that's a lot. 1.2, so clearly intent to distribute. 32-year-old Urani Hector was arrested. They said that they detected a narcotic odor. He's in a lot of trouble. Stick with us. Third hour on the way.
Why won't you take responsibility now?
I've already addressed that many times.
And I said this whole question will be addressed after the war.
Why
just as people
now?
Would ask. Well, did people ask Franklin Roosevelt after Pearl Harbor that question? Did people ask George Bush after the surprise attack of November 11th? Look, it's a question that needs to be asked.
He's not. I mean, I think that was a good answer, actually, that he gave. I mean, sure, people are definitely going to ask the question of what's up. But, you know, how did that happen? But I think his answer there was that was a quite a good answer. Welcome back to the show. It's I can't. Is it really hour three?
It is.
Wait, what trickery is this? Dana Lash here with you. Top of our third hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program. You can watch the simulcast of the radio show as well on YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. So the question of intelligence, they'll absolutely, I mean, they will know. I mean, obviously, they'll try to figure out what ended up happening. I do have the question of how did all those reporters from the AP and CNN and all of that and Reuters that were apparently riding on the back of Hamas bikes holding grenades, how did they know all of this stuff was happening but intelligence agencies didn't? I do have that question. I think it's a completely legitimate question to ask. It's not mean. It's you want to know. But at the same time, is it shocking that a terrorist that has repeatedly attacked Israel is going to attack? I mean, come on. They're a terrorist group. They don't want to live in peace. No peace for them. They want none. I mean, that's basically what they were protesting when they were in London for the Remembrance Day. All those pro-Hamas protesters out there. We got to talk about some 2024 stuff. You have Tim Scott that dropped out. I think Vivek Ramaswamy's got to go. And I think Chris Christie has got to go. I think they have to go because they're just drags anymore. They really are. Someone was floating the idea of Vivek Ramaswamy being RNC chair. I just think that maybe you want to have voted Republican more than like one time and haven't given a bunch of money to Democrats before you start running the RNC. That's true. You can feel free to go find it on my Substack, Chapter and Verse, where I included screenshots of all the hashtag receipts. So I just think that that's kind of a bad idea. I do think my original assessment of Nikki Haley in this race was that she was running to be VP. I stand by that assessment. I still think that that is true. Case in point, a friend of mine had noted, let me pull this up, that the whole, like, she's only apparently mentioned Trump one time in 2 months. In 2 months, she's only mentioned Trump once. Now, I'm not saying that you have to go out and constantly, you know, like go and attack Trump base. I'm just saying if you are running to be president, wouldn't you go after the front runner, the perceived front runner? Wouldn't you go after that person? Now, I've told everyone to be cautious of national polls, especially this far ahead of the first votes in Iowa, because national votes really are just more of a measure on popularity. Or national polls, rather, are just a more of a measure on popularity. It's not really a good measure of fundraising, et cetera, you know, all this stuff. And with this, Iowa and New Hampshire are going to be the ultimate deciding factors. But Haley, I could see, I mean, technically I could see Trump maybe picking somebody like Haley, but I think that she's still running to be VP because she's still, her foreign policy is what hangs me up. Her foreign policy is one that I cannot abide. And I don't dislike her as a person. I think I met her once backstage at a speaking event. I think she had spoken right before me. I can't remember. I know I met her once very, very briefly. Never really spoken with her. But, you know, she's very nice. It's not a personal thing. I just don't agree with her foreign policy. I think it's very it's neocon. It really is. It's very W. Bush. Very, 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 very much so. I mean, it is like a flashback to that. I have a problem with that. That's a big problem with me. And so especially when you still have better choices, I think, in the primary, it's just a no-go for me. But I just still, because she never says anything about Trump. And I just think that when you're focusing everything on the second person in this primary in terms of polling, et cetera, then to me, it sounds like you're running a stalking horse campaign, which I would bet money on it that Vivek is. I would bet literally six figures on that. I think that Haley is also. Not so much a stalking horse. I don't think that there's any kind of secret agreement. I do think that she does want to be VP because I don't think that she would translate nationally with her foreign policy and some of her other approach. I think she would try to moderate going into the general, but I think it would be too late. And also, I think that she, because she was in the Trump administration, that branding is going to stick to her. And you remember, it does not matter if you like the whole idea of the MAGA label. That's irrelevant here. What I'm telling you is that all of this is decided in the margins. And I'm telling you what the margins think of that branding. And the margins they rejected it last Tuesday. They rejected it in Virginia and they rejected it in Ohio. So you have to finesse the branding. And she is branded with that because she was in part of the administration. So you have to consider that. Again, this is not people disagreeing with you about who you like or what you perceive to be your priority in the primary. This is people like me wanting to win in 2024. That is literally my only concern, is I want to win. I don't care. I don't have fealty to any candidate because I don't believe in that. They should have fealty to us. I will never bend a knee to a candidate, ever. I never have a loyalty like that to a candidate, ever. I have rejected overtures from candidates before. I have rejected job offers from candidates before. I have zero interest in, A, that kind of pay cut, because my special interest is my audience. I have zero interest in that. And I also, I can't. That's just not my deal. And so, I want to win. I just want to win in 2024. That is the only, if you want to know about my perspective, that's literally the perspective through which I see everything. And 2024, I think more so than any other election, is all margins. And people need to be looking at Ohio and Virginia as giant, giant warning signs. And they're not. It's going to be decided by the margins. Now, I will say there have been a couple of people that I think are making a decent point. Now, so Ann Coulter and I used to talk. We were never like BFFs or anything like that. We knew each other. And she and I got in it in the 2016 because in the very beginning of the primary, I was back in Perry and she liked Trump for his immigration stuff. And I always went for governors over non-governors. And we got in it. And she like unfollowed me on social media and all this stuff, totally unfollowed me. And then she turned around and then she was like harsher than anybody on Trump. And she said, I will say this, she said, made a point where I don't necessarily agree all the way or disagree all the way, because there's a lot of nuance here. The point that she brought up, and I've heard a couple of other people make this point similarly, is she was saying that Republicans have to be careful, particularly on what she called a hardline anti-abortion stance. So she's pro-life, a hardline anti-abortion stance, because she says the left is going to make that the defund the police of the GOP. Now, I've seen this worded differently from other people, and we've talked about it here on the show, because where is the election determined? On the margins. And that's why you see this messaging from the left, especially with the issue of abortion in these states that have passed it after Roe v. Wade sent everything back to the state. Republicans have been very, very bad in navigating the messaging and saying that, yes, stop saying that there aren't exceptions. There are literally exceptions, literally in every single state that has passed any kind of regulation on this. But here's the problem that they're running up against. So this is another thing that I saw. It was, what's his face? Chris Wallace. He was over at Fox. Now he's over at CNN. He said something very interesting. He was saying that how are they going to talk to voters about this? Because how are you going to tell them that you're pro-life, but yet, yeah, you want the 15-week? I'm pulling this story up, so bear with me. This was, I think, yeah, he said, why is the abortion murder, is murder crowd says now says 15 weeks is fine? Now, that's the point that he made on CNN on Sunday. Now, it is, first off, he's begging the question. He's begging the question with us because he's presuming that he's saying that, you know, the abortion is murder. People are saying 15 weeks is fine. Thus, you know, so why are they saying that as a way to intimate that the legitimacy of the movement is called into question? But he's assuming that his premise is sound. Thus, the conclusion is sound. So he's begging the question because he's making these assumptions. No one is saying that 15 weeks is fine. They're saying that they will start at that point to walk it back. If that saves an additional X amount of lives, then they will move to that point away from abortion on demand up until birth, taxpayer funded. They will move to that point. That's what they're saying. But remember, when you are explaining you are losing, and again, where are elections won and lost, especially the last two? Margins. That is never going to be more important ever than it will be in 2024. It's all about the margins. This is going to be something that will play in the margins, which is why Republicans, I know, I get it. It's like we've been arguing about this damn issue forever. I get it. And I also understand if you're pro-life and you think that any compromise, but do you want to say, let's not save any lives if I can't get everything I want, or let's start convincing people and start saving more lives and work incrementally? I mean, and then at least save more lives today than you did yesterday. That's how a lot of other people look at it. And there has to be a way to quickly and efficiently message that in 30 seconds or less, where you're not in this never-ending cycle of explaining and then losing credibility. Because the longer you explain, the investment of legitimacy that a voter has in you will decrease. They will start to question your credibility the longer you take to explain something. And so that they have got to get a handle on this, because that is what the left is gearing up to do. I have sound bites from Premier Jayapal who were saying, yes, this is going to be our big issue. I think that she was saying, she's talking about the margins, and she was saying that abortion and reaction to Gaza, that's going to be a big issue in 2024. We're going to talk about that coming up. In fact, we may hit that again tomorrow, because that's, she's telegraphing. She's telling you where they're going with this.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
This is terrifying. So this apparently took place in Rome, where a lion got loose. People were even told to shelter in place because, I mean, it's a lion. Caused terror, prowled the streets freely. It escaped from the circus. And it was a town near Rome, caused terror amongst all the residents. They had footage all over social media showing this lion wandering around the streets of this small town. It has just a population of just over 40,000. And everyone said that they were told to shelter inside as authorities.
What the heck I'd do?
A lion? Yeah, I'd be like, free lion. You may get a lion.
A free lion.
Finders keepers. Ma'am, we think you have that. No, this is my lion. It's not the lion you're looking for. It's just mine. I don't know what I'd do with it just to have one. I feel like I'm Snow White. Like, I want all the animals. They're all mine. This is a terrifying article. This came out, this story here. It showed that more than 100 veterans died. More than 100 veterans died at a New York home after one of the worst COVID outbreaks in the state. And they said that apparently weren't, was, anybody know where Anthony Cuomo is? Anybody know where Cuomo is? Everybody's looking for him. It was a housing facility in New York City. They had an outbreak apparently, and it was the New York State Veterans Home in St. Albans. And they said that all of these are already super critically ill veterans. So they were already way super immunocompromised. They were all incredibly elderly. But apparently they weren't even given any treatment. No one even took them to the hospital. Nothing. They just let them. Oh, boy. Wow. I'm just going to say a word that rhymes with schmalsuit. Let's see here. Humans apparently have a third set of teeth. Popular Mechanics says that there might be medicine to help them grow. Why would you want them to grow? What? That's terrifying. It was a 2021 study out of Japan. They said you can target genes to regrow teeth in animals. Now they're trying to, they're doing clinical trials on how to do this in humans. They said that, you know, that's what makes sharks so intriguing, because they can just grow teeth, regrow teeth. So they're doing a clinical trial of medicine, which they hope will be available for general use in 2030 to regrow teeth. That would only work for people like Hunter Biden. Maybe. I don't know. The stores are snubbing Black Friday's mega sales. Apple's, Apple, Tiffany's, others are deciding to not participate. They're snubbing the Black Friday stuff. And FedEx accidentally delivered $20,000 in lottery tickets to a woman's house. We have our friend Stephen Yates joining us next. Stick with us.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
I know folks say, oh, they're just cleaning up this place because all those fancy leaders are coming into town. That's true, because it's true. But it's also true, for months and months and months prior to AIPAC, we've been having different conversations.
I mean, can we just slice that? Well, it's true because it's true. Yes. I mean, there's really no way to hide that. That's already, it's Monday, and it's my favorite soundbite so far. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lesher. You can listen coast to coast, stream the show if you're not listening terrestrially across the country, and you can also watch the simulcast, YouTube, Facebook, channel 347, DirecTV. So I want to play the doubling down on this, but first off, I want to bring in our very good friend, Stephen Yates, and you can follow him at YatesComms. It autofills. I don't know why I have to look twice. It's two M's. At YatesComms on Twitter, senior fellow at America First Policy Institute, and he's also the chair of the China Policy Initiative. So I wanted to play that for you, Stephen. So he says they're cleaning it up ahead of Xi Jinping and Joe Biden going to be meeting in San Francisco. He did, Kane, if you could just prepare this, he did double down on this whole thing. Go ahead and hit me again. Hit me.
Anytime you put on an event, by definition, you know, you have people over your house. You're going to clean up the house. You have 21 world leaders. You got tens of thousands of people coming from all around the globe. What an opportunity to showcase the world's most extraordinary place, San Francisco.
So wouldn't this just be gentrification, cleaning up the feces and the needles on the streets? I mean, honestly, I mean, at this point, you're talking about welcoming, you know, Xi Jinping and some of these other leaders in, but you know, Xi Jinping, I mean, they put Uyghurs in prison. Do we really care if you see some needles on the streets?
Oh my, where to begin with this guy? But on all of my dad time, I did not have to tell my kids to pick up the feces and needles in the house before guests came over.
Yeah.
So, and Gavin Newsom basically has had cradle to grave white glove treatment. I don't think he's picked up anything in his life. So he doesn't need to be talking to anybody about cleaning up anything. We don't even know who cleans his hair. It's not him. But you know, this guy is so phony baloney, I'm choking on it. But he's not cleaning up San Francisco for just any leader. He's cleaning up San Francisco for the leader he just went over and slobbered all over. And for all we know, Xi Jinping told him, well, I'll only come if you clean all the feces and needles up.
Right.
And by the way, don't let any of those pro-Hamas protesters that we've been helping by way of our buddies in Iran disrupt my peaceful vacation in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So, you know, it turns out that for Gavin, it's cool to clean up downtown now that his boss is coming to town. And it turns out that walls work, too. Who'd have thought?
You brought up something, Mr. Yates. You brought up something that's very... that I think is very important, how he had just gone over there to slobber all over Xi Jinping. Was that, do you think, him trying to steal a little bit of the thunder from Joe Biden? Because you said the boss is now coming to town, not Xi Jinping, although, you know, it could be questions, that Joe Biden's coming to meet with his boss, Xi Jinping. They're going to be meeting in San Francisco. Gavin, I felt like Gavin Newsom's running this like ghost campaign for a president. Like he's just waiting in the wings. But is that, do you think that there's like a little, there was a little competition in that move? And secondly, I feel like do you think that the communist Chinese would play to that a little bit?
I think that the Chinese play to any divisions they can. And no one more than Xi Jinping knows the shortcomings of our current president.
Yeah.
And so
he's going to ask him to do algebra, isn't he?
Yes. He can't even go through the courses of the menu. So we're going to have Xi Jinping, he's looking at 2024. The contest on the Republican side is getting a lot of attention. There isn't any question that he's going to look at the governor of California, because the Chinese have to have real doubts. Yeah. Can this current administration really extend for four more years? It's just hard for them to even compute. But they also know that California, sort of like Wall Street has been for a long time, that is kind of their beachfront of pro-China propaganda and engagement in the United States. It's gone from Hollywood into Silicon Valley and into our homes. And so he's going to look at engagement with the governor of this big economic state, but also the gateway to controlling and manipulating Americans. And so I don't know that Gavin is as careful about engaging the Chinese. The Democratic Party's had a little rough up in recent years about letting some of those influencers get a little too close to them. But there's no question Xi Jinping is looking to score some points. And I think that the engagement with California is a pretty overt one.
We're talking with our good friend Stephen Yates. You can follow him on X at YatesComs. I have heard this described before, this meeting that's going to be taking place in San Francisco is like a zombie forum, or like as in nothing's going to come of this, because there doesn't really seem. I mean, it's Joe Biden, as you just said, he's going to struggle with the menu. I mean, what ultimately are they going to agree upon? Because China has made it very, very clear where they stand as it relates to, the South China Sea and Taiwan, etc. The United States just kind of is, more of the vagary, more of the, it feels like they're just kind of dancing in circles and then to pass it along to whatever next leadership comes into office. What is the point of it? What's going to happen? What's the point of playing niceties with people when you're going to stab them in the back, from across the Pacific?
Well, the Chinese enjoy it. So, they are experts at having content-free meetings. And they have understood that Westerners are dupes, because we will overemphasize what they say and underemphasize what they do. And they've been getting away with this for decades. So the Chinese kind of find this to be entertainment, and it sort of buys them time and appeasement. So why not continue it? But there's several outrages in all of this. Supposedly there was a strain in our government at some point, and in certain political parties, that stood up for human rights and things like genocide. That G word gets thrown around a lot. Here's a real one. But you know where there's been a political genocide? Hong Kong. You know who else has been invited to this gathering? The sanctioned leader of the Hong Kong economic region. So, there's the government has bent over backwards not to enforce any of the high and mighty moralistic rules that our congressional leaders say that they stand for. But where's Chuck Schumer's sharp tongue that he supposedly took to China about things he cared about versus what's being enforced for Xi Jinping and the leader of Hong Kong to come to San freaking Cisco?
Yeah, that's a great point. They said, apparently, according to Politico, that one of the things that the president's going to stress to China is their relationship with Iran as a way to kind of put some pressure on China to encourage Iran not to escalate anything in that region, which I think is that seems like a dumb ask to me, because you're basically telling China, well, we know you hate us. This would make things difficult for us. So can you tell them to not do this thing that would make things difficult for us? I would just think that they would say, thank you so much for just telegraphing our next move.
Well, I'm someone who loves peace. I don't really want war and all that fun stuff. But, there is proven ways to influence. One is, as you serve the Chinese leader chocolate cake, you smoke some Russian bad guys in Syria. And then you say, enjoy your cake, Mr. Xi, and fly your way home. And Mr. Xi cleans up after himself and goes home and says, I don't know what to expect from this American leader. That was the early time of Donald Trump's engagement with Xi Jinping. When you want to influence Iran, it turned out, when you smoke one of their evil intelligence operatives that was culpable in the murder of many Americans in the Middle East, they tend to go, something bad can happen if we start pushing too hard. One thing that has proven never to move Iran or China is jabbering your jaw at them and trying to parrot back to them your interpretation of their interests. Mm. They know them. They've already run the math. That's why they're killing you with poisons, with military intimidation, and economic deals that are meant to be anti-American. So, you know, this kind of gab fest, I'm much more for, if you want to get together and share some cake, at least hit them hard somewhere so they can see what you do.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Smoke somebody and then, you know, smoke a baddie and then, you know, serve them this chocolate cake. Because what happened with Soleimani, isn't it?
I'm just a humble man observing what happened over dinner some years ago. And, you know, I didn't frankly expect that to happen in that exchange. I'm supposedly an expert. I should have seen this coming. But you know who else didn't see it coming? It turns out when you freak out these bad guys, it actually has an effect.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't want to do anything that's stupid and could sink us into a quagmire. But you got to show some strength somewhere. It's got to be an action that they respect.
The other thing, too, with this, and talking with our good friend Stephen Yates, I dislike Biden, obviously, as a person and a politician, which it's not always that way with these politicians, but I just dislike him personally and politically. But at the same time, you know, as an American, I don't ever want my country to appear weak because of the optic of our leader. If you have a weak leader, I feel like it projects weakness onto the country that he's representing. And I don't want to be represented that way on the world stage, especially with like a freak like Xi Jinping. And that's just more fodder for their propaganda for all of their billions at home.
Well, there's a couple of things that are unique to our current occupant that I frankly am sad about. And I think it does weaken our position in trying to deter China. One is he has a multiple decade record of just making things up on camera. And so they know that his word is not his bond, because his word could literally be anything at any time. And you go back to the 1970s, it's on videotape from multiple campaigns and instances. So the Chinese know there isn't any due north compass here. It's a wavering wet spaghetti noodle that'll go anywhere. They also know where the wire transfers went and what they were for. They know more than the American people do, and they don't need to await the proof. They likely have the proof. And so it's the worst possible. We haven't even gotten into, will Stairs be involved in this movement?
Oh, my
in
gosh.
This meeting? And so there's all kinds of things that just make this the worst part of central casting for the effort. I mean, we are just so far from the Gipper being able to come in and just stealthily deliver a smooth line that cuts them to shreds before they even know it, get the room laughing and walk out. They don't even know they're a corpse yet. That's what a real leader, a real influencer could do. We don't have that now. And we, fingers crossed, at best, are waiting until January 2025.
Oh my gosh, that's a long time to wait. Our very good friend, Stephen Yates at Yates Comms in rare form today. We haven't even talked about it. Are there Stairs? Oh my gosh, let's not have Stairs involved. Always so good to see you, my friend. God bless you. We love hearing your perspective. We'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you, Dana. Take
care. Of course, you too.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And this is a long one, although I'm going to get the Aaron Rodgers treatment, whatever that is. so I'm going to be calling him or whoever did his surgery, because we need to speed this up. But yeah, I thought about it a little bit. I mean, you know, I'm not a religious person or anything. And if there wasn't God, like, this is proof that there isn't. This is f***ed up.
She has a career-ending injury. I love this satirical piece at the Washington Free Beacon. It says, guest column. Again, it's a satirical piece. It says, God here, Megan Rapinoe's career-ending injuries, proof that I'm real. Subhead, I thought it would be hilarious, and it was. I mean, some people could say it was prayers answered. I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. So seriously joking. Yes, I am. So she injured her. I don't care about this. I just thought it was funny. I really don't even care about her. She makes me hate soccer. I just play and stop, you know, trying to pad out your weaknesses with politics. I can't stand when people do that. I can't deal with it. Ugh. Make sure you go ahead and sign up for the newsletter over at Substack. It's called Chapter and Verse. Lots of good stuff that goes out all throughout the week for you. And you don't want to miss it because you might miss something good. And I always get you anything trending, anything coming up to make sure it's all set straight before the cable news spin starts, for sure. Like, for instance, I was looking at this. We started the show talking about how this the Al-Shifa Hospital, how it's being spun that, oh my gosh, those mean people over at Israel, they bombed this hospital and so many people are affected. That's the hospital that Hamas uses as its headquarters. And they were warned way in advance to, you know, watch out, this is coming. And it said an hour apart, U.S. Intel confirms Hamas's command node under Al-Shifa Hospital. And then at 2:30, 1 hour later, Biden says the Al-Shifa Hospital, quote, must be protected. And then once and urged less intrusive action. That's literally our own intel, because everybody knows this. And that's, it's so ridiculous. Everybody knows Hamas has their command headquarters literally right under the Al-Shifa Hospital, has for years. But hey. All right. Today in stupidity, Kane.
Okay. It's our president, Joe Biden. And I don't know if this is accidental or if this is intentional, because he's done this several times before. He's called Vice President Kamala Harris.
Oh, this is weird.
President. So he says President Harris here. Listen carefully. And Juan, do you have this one, or this is one I have? Okay. I'll play it for you right here. Listen to this.
So awkward.
President Harris there to make sure we do this the right way.
I know y'all caught that.
Hold on. Let's play it one more time. Listen.
President Harris there to make sure we do this the right way.
Ooh, oh. I know y'all caught that. Ooh.
So is it intentional? Was this a mistake? And one that he's made several times in the past? Or is this intentional?
That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I would love to know. Maybe she's talked about it so much that it's stuck in his cheese brain. I don't know. Folks, that does it for us this afternoon. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack. Chapter and Verse, like and subscribe, and I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow. Have a great night.